How odd that he could go weeks without even noticing this hole in his memories, this change that had ripped out a piece of him and left him patched over, without even a prick of emotion when her name, which he could not hear, was mentioned. Best to move to some other topic.
I cannot help but assume that the assassin is involved in all of this, Navani. The storm that comes, the secrets of the shattered plains, even Gavilar. My brother knew something, something he never shared with any of us.
You must find the most important words a man can say.
I would give almost anything to know what it was.
I suppose, Navani said. I will go back to my journals of the time. Perhaps he said something that would give us clues, though I warn you I've pored over those accounts dozens of times.
Dalinar nodded.
Regardless, that isn't a worry for today. Today, they are our goal.
They turned, looking as coaches clattered past, making their way to the nearby feasting basin where lights glowed a soft violet in the night. He narrowed his eyes and found Ruthar's coach approaching. The High Prince had been stripped of shards, all but his own blade. They had cut off Sadius's right hand in this mess, but the head remained, and it was venomous. The other High Princes were almost as big a problem as Sadius. They resisted him because they wanted things to be easy, as they had been. They glutted themselves on their riches and their games. Feasts manifested that all too much, with their exotic food, their rich costumes. The world itself seemed close to ending, and the Alethi threw a party.
You must not despise them, Navani said.
Dalinar's frown deepened. She could read him too well.
Listen to me, Dalinar, she said, turning him to meet her eyes. Has any good ever come from a father hating his children?
I don't hate them.
You loathe their excess, she said, and you are close to applying that emotion to them as well. They live the lives they have known, the lives that society has taught them are proper. You won't change them with contempt. You aren't wit. It isn't your job to scorn them. Your job is to enfold them, encourage them. Lead them, Dalinar.
He took a deep breath and nodded.
I will go to the women's island,
she said, noticing the Bridgeman guard returning with news on the plateau assault.
They consider me an eccentric vestige of things better left in the past, but I think they still listen to me. Sometimes. I'll do what I can.
They parted, Navani hurrying to the feast, Dalinar idling as the Bridgeman passed his news. The plateau run had been successful, a gem heart captured. It had taken quite a long time to reach the target plateau, which was deep into the plains, almost to the edge of the scouted area. The Parshendi had not appeared to contest the gem heart, though their scouts had watched from a distance.
Again they decide not to fight, Dalinar thought, walking the last distance to the feast. What does the change mean? What are they planning?
The feast basin was made up of a series of soul-cast islands beside the pinnacle complex. It had been flooded, as it often was, in a way that made the soul-cast mounds rise between small rivers. The water glowed. Spheres, and a lot of them, must have been dumped into the water to give it that ethereal cast. Purple, to match the moon that was just rising, violet and frail on the horizon. Lanterns were placed intermittently, but with dim spheres, perhaps to not distract from the glowing water. Dalinar crossed the bridges to the farthest island, the King's Island, where the genders mixed and only the most powerful were invited. This was where he knew he'd find the High Princes. Even Bethab, who had just returned from his plateau run, was already in attendance, though as he preferred to use mercenary companies for the bulk of his army, it wasn't surprising he had returned so quickly from the run. Once they captured the gem heart, he'd often ride back quickly with the prize, letting them sort out how to return. Dalinar passed Wit, who had arrived back at the war camps with characteristic mystery, insulting everyone who passed. He had no wish to fence words with the man today. Instead, he sought out Vama. The High Prince seemed to have actually listened to Dalinar's pleas during their most recent dinner. Perhaps with more nudging, he would commit to joining Dalinar's assault on the Parshendi. Eyes followed Dalinar as he crossed the island, and whispered conversations broke out like rashes as he passed. He expected those looks by now, though they still unnerved him. Were they more plentiful this night? More lingering? He couldn't move in Alethi society these days without catching a smile on the lips of too many people, as if they were all part of some grand joke that he had not been told. He found Vama speaking with a group of three older women. One was Sivi, a high lady from Ruthar's court who, contrary to custom, had left her husband at home to see to their lands, coming to the Shattered Plains herself. She eyed Dalinar with a smile and eyes like daggers. The plot to undermine Satius had to a large extent failed, but that was in part because the damage and shame had been deflected to Ruthar and Aladar, who had suffered the loss of Shardbearers and the men who had dueled Adolin. Well, those two were never going to have been Dalinar's. They were Satius's strongest supporters. The four people grew silent as Dalinar stepped up to them. High Prince Vama squinted in the dim light, looking Dalinar up and down. The round-faced man had a cupbearer standing behind him with a bottle of some exotic liquor or another. Vama often brought his own spirits to feasts, regardless of who hosted them. Being engaging enough a conversationalist to earn a sip of what he'd managed to import was considered a political triumph by many attendees.
"Vama," Dalinar said.
"Dalinar? There's a matter I've been wanting to discuss with you," Dalinar said. "I find it impressive what you've been able to do with light cavalry on your plateau runs. Tell me, how do you decide when to risk an all-out assault with your riders? The loss of horses could easily overwhelm your earnings from gem hearts, but you have managed to balance this with clever stratagems."
Vama
sighed, looking to the side. A group of young men nearby was snickering as they looked toward Dalinar.
"It is a matter of..."
Another sound, louder, came from the opposite side of the island. Vama started again, but his eyes flicked in that direction, and a round of laughter burst out more loudly. Dalinar forced himself to look, noting women with hands to mouths, men covering their exclamations with coughs, a half-hearted attempt at maintaining Alethi propriety. Dalinar looked back at Vama.
"What is happening?"
"I'm sorry, Dalinar."
Beside him, Sivi tucked some sheets of paper under her arm. She met Dalinar's gaze with a forced nonchalance.
"Excuse me," Dalinar said.
Hands forming fists, he crossed the island toward the source of the disturbance. As he neared, they quieted, and people broke up into smaller groups, moving off. It almost seemed planned how quickly they dispersed, leaving him to face Satius and Aladar standing side by side.
"What are you doing?"
Dalinar demanded of the two of them.
"Feasting," Satius said, then shoved a piece of fruit into his mouth. "Obviously."
Dalinar drew in a deep breath. He glanced at Aladar, long-necked and bald, with his mustache and tuft of hair on his bottom lip.
"You should be ashamed," Dalinar growled at him. "My brother once called you a friend."
"And not me," Satius said.
"What have you done?" Dalinar demanded. "What is everyone talking about, snickering about behind their hands?"
"You always assume it's me," Satius said.
"That's because any time I think it isn't you, I'm wrong."
Satius gave him a thin-lipped smile. He started to reply, but then thought a moment and finally just stuffed another chunk of fruit in his mouth. He chewed and smiled.
"Tastes good," was all he said.
He turned to walk away. Aladar hesitated. Then he shook his head and followed.
"I never figured you for a pup to follow at a master's heels, Aladar,"
Dalinar called after him. No reply. Dalinar growled, moving back across the island, looking for someone from his own war camp who might have heard what was happening. Elokar was late to his own feast, it seemed, though Dalinar did see him approaching outside now. No sign of Tashav or Kal yet, They would undoubtedly make an appearance now that he was a shard-bearer. Delinar might have to move to one of the other islands, where lesser light eyes would be mingling. He started that way, but stopped as he heard something.
"Why, Bright Lord Amaram," Whit cried. "I was hoping I'd be able to see you tonight. I've spent my life learning to make others feel miserable, and so it's a true joy to meet someone so innately talented in that very skill as you are."
Delinar turned, noticing Amaram, who had just arrived. He wore his cape of the Knight's Radiant and carried a sheaf of papers stuck under his arm. He stopped beside Wit's chair, the nearby water casting a lavender tone across their skin.
"Do I know you?" Amaram asked.
"No,"
Wit said lightly. "But fortunately you can add it to the list of many, many things of which you are ignorant."
"But now I've met you," Amaram said, holding out a hand. "So the list is one smaller."
"Please," Wit said, refusing the hand. "I wouldn't want it to rub off on me."
"It?"
"Whatever you've been using to make your hands look clean, Bright Lord Amaram, it must be powerful stuff indeed."
Delinar hurried over.
"Delinar?"
Wit said, nodding.
"Wit? Amaram, what are those papers?" "One of your clerks seized them and brought them to me," Amaram said. "Copies were being passed around the feast before your arrival. Your clerk thought Brightness Navani might want to see them if she hasn't already. Where is she?"
"Staying away from you, obviously," Wit noted. "Lucky woman."
"Wit," Delinar said sternly, "do you mind?"
"Rarely."
Delinar sighed, looking back to Amaram and taking the papers. "Brightness Navani is on another island. Do you know what these say?" Amaram's expression grew grim.
"I wish I didn't."
"I could hit you in the head with a hammer," Wit said happily. "A good bludgeoning would make you forget and do wonders for that face of yours."
"Wit," Delinar said flatly.
"I'm only joking."
"Good.
A hammer would hardly dent that thick skull of his."
Amaram turned to Wit, a look of bafflement on his face.
"You're very good at that expression," Wit noted. "A great deal of practice, I assume?"
"This is the new Wit?"
Amaram asked.
"I mean," Wit said, "I wouldn't want to call Amaram an imbecile."
Delinar nodded.
"Because then I'd have to explain to him what the word means, and I'm not certain any of us have the requisite time."
Amaram sighed.
"Why hasn't anyone killed him yet?"
"Dumb luck," Wit said. "In that I'm lucky, you're also dumb."
"Thank you, Wit,"
Delinar said, taking Amaram by the arm and towing him to the side.
"One more, Delinar," Wit said. "Just one last insult, and I leave him alone."
They continued walking.
"Lord Amaram," Wit
called, standing to bow, his voice growing solemn.
"I salute you. You are what lesser cretins like Sadius can only aspire to be."
"The papers," Delinar said to Amaram, pointedly ignoring Wit.
"They are accounts of your experiences, Bright Lord,"
Amaram said softly.
"The ones you have during the storms, written by Brightness Navani herself."
Delinar took the papers. His visions. He looked up and saw groups of people collecting on the island, chatting and laughing, shooting glances at him.
"I see," he said softly.
It made sense now, the hidden snickering.
"Find Brightness Navani for me, if you would."
"As you request,"
Amaram said, but stopped short, pointing. Navani stalked across the next island over, heading toward them with a tempestuous air about her.
"What do you think, Amaram,"
Delinar said,
"of the things that are being said of me?"
Amaram met his eyes.
"They are obviously visions from the Almighty himself, given to us in a time of great need. I wish I had known their contents earlier. They give me great confidence in my position and in your appointment as prophet of the Almighty."
"A dead god can have no prophets."
"Dead? No, Delinar. You obviously misinterpret that comment from your visions. He speaks of being dead in the minds of men, that they no longer listen to his commands. God cannot die."
Amaram seemed so earnest. Why didn't he help your sons? Kaladin's voice rang in Dalinar's mind. Amaram had come to him that day, of course, professing his apologies and explaining that, with his appointment as a Radiant, he couldn't possibly have helped one faction against another. He said he needed to be above the squabbles between high princes, even when it pained him.
And the supposed herald?
Dalinar asked.
The thing I asked you about?
I am still investigating.
Dalinar nodded.
I was surprised, Amaram noted, that you left the slave as head of your guard.
He glanced to the side to see where Dalinar's guards for the night stood, just off the island in their own area, waiting with the other bodyguards and attendants, including many of the wards of the High Ladies present. There had been a time, not too long ago, when few had felt the need to bring their guards with them to a feast. Now the place was crowded. Captain Kaladin wasn't there. He was resting after his imprisonment.
"He's a good soldier," Dalinar said softly. "He just carries a few scars that are having trouble healing."
"Vitiligo knows," Dalinar thought. "I have a few of those myself."
"I merely worry that he is incapable of properly protecting you," Amaram said. "Your life is important, Dalinar. We need your visions, your leadership. Still, if you trust the slave, then so be it. Though I certainly wouldn't mind hearing an apology from him. Not for my own ego, but to know that he's put aside this misconception of his."
Dalinar gave no reply as Navani strode across the short bridge onto their island. Wit started to proclaim an insult, but she swatted him in the face with a stack of papers, giving him barely a glance as she continued on toward Dalinar. Wit watched after, rubbing his cheek and grinned. She noted the papers in his hand as she joined the two of them, who seemed to stand among a sea of amused eyes and hushed laughter.
"They added words," Navani hissed.
"What?"
Dalinar demanded. She shook the papers.
"These. You've heard what they contain?"
He nodded.
"They aren't as I wrote them,"
Navani said.
"They've changed the tone, some of my words, to imply a ridiculousness to the entire experience, and to make it sound as if I am merely indulging you. What's worse, they added a commentary in another handwriting that pokes fun at what you say and do."
She took a deep breath, as if to calm herself.
"Dalinar, they're trying to destroy any shred of credibility left to your name."
"I see."
"How did they get these?"
Amaram asked.
"Through theft, I do not doubt," Dalinar said, realizing something. "Navani and my sons always have guards, but when they leave their rooms, those are relatively unprotected. We may have been too lax in that regard. I misunderstood. I thought his attacks would be physical."
Navani looked out at the sea of light eyes, many congregating in groups around the various high princes in the soft, violet light. She stepped closer to Dalinar, and though her eyes were fierce, he knew her well enough to guess what she was feeling. Betrayal, invasion. That which was private to them, opened up, mocked, and then displayed for the world.
"Dalinar, I'm sorry,"
Amaram said.
"They did not change the visions themselves?"
Dalinar asked.
"They copied them accurately?"
"So far as I can tell, yes,"
Navani said.
"But the tone is different. And that mockery. Storms. It's nauseating. When I find the woman who did this..."
"Peace, Navani,"
Dalinar said, resting his hand on her shoulder.
"How can you say that?"
"Because this is the act of childish men who assume that I can be embarrassed by the truth."
"But the commentary, the changes... They've done everything they can to discredit you. They've even managed to undermine the part where you offer a translation of the Dawn Chant. It..."
"As I fear not a child with a weapon he cannot lift, I will never fear the mind of a man who does not think."
Navani frowned at him.
"It's from the Way of Kings," Dalinar said. "I am not a youth, nervous at his first feast. Sadius makes a mistake in believing I will respond to this as he would. Unlike a sword, scorn has only the bite you give it.
This does hurt you,
Navani said, meeting his eyes.
I can see it, Dalinar.
Hopefully, the others would not know him well enough to see what she did. Yes, it did hurt. It hurt because these visions were his, entrusted to him, to be shared for the good of men, not to be held up for mockery. It was not the laughter itself that pained him, but the loss of what could have been. He stepped away from her, passing through the crowd. Some of those eyes he now interpreted as being sorrowful, not just amused. Perhaps he was imagining it, but he thought some pitied him more than scorned him. He wasn't certain which emotion was more damaging. Dalinar reached the food table at the back of the island. There he picked up a large pan and handed it to a bewildered serving woman, then hauled himself up onto the table. He set one hand on the lantern pole beside the table and looked out over the small crowd. They were the most important people in Alethkar. Those who hadn't already been watching him turned with shock to see him up there. In the distance, he noticed Adolin and Brightness Shallan rushing onto the island. They'd likely only just arrived and heard the talk. Dalinar looked to the crowd.
"What you have read," he bellowed, "is true."
Stunned silence. Making a spectacle of oneself in this way was not done in Alethkar. He, however, had already been this evening's spectacle.
"Commentary has been added to discredit me," Dalinar said, "and the tone of Navani's writing has been changed. But I will not hide what has been happening to me. I see visions from the Almighty. They come with almost every storm. This should not surprise you. There have been rumors circulating about my experiences for weeks now. Perhaps I should have released these visions already. In the future, each one I receive will be published so that scholars around the world can investigate what I have seen."
He sought out Sadius, who stood with Aladar and Ruthar. Dalinar gripped the lantern pole, looking back at the Alethi crowd.
"I do not blame you for thinking I am mad. It is natural. But in the coming nights, when rain washes your walls and the wind howls, you will wonder. You will question. And soon, when I offer you proof, you will know. This attempt to destroy me will then vindicate me instead."
He looked over their faces, some aghast, some sympathetic, others amused.
"There are those among you who assume I will flee or be broken because of this attack," he said. "They do not know me as well as they presume. Let the feast continue, for I wish to speak with each and every one of you. The words you hold may mock, but if you must laugh, do it while looking me in the eyes."
He stepped down from the table. Then he went to work. Hours later, Dalinar eventually let himself sit down in a seat beside a table at the feast, exhaustion spren swirling around him. He'd spent the rest of the evening moving through the crowd, forcing his way into conversations, drumming up support for his excursion onto the plains. He had pointedly ignored the pages with his visions on them, except when asked direct questions about what he'd seen. Instead, he had presented them with a forceful, confident man, the Blackthorn turned politician. Let them chew on that, and compare him to the frail madman the falsified transcripts would make him out to be. Outside, past the small rivers, they now glowed blue, the spheres having been changed to match the second moon, the king's carriage rolled away, bearing Elokar and Navani the short distance to the pinnacle, where porters would carry them in a palanquin up to the top. Adolin had already retired, escorting Shallan back to Sabariel's war camp, which was a fair ride away. Adolin seemed to be fonder of the young Vaden woman than of any woman in the recent past. For that reason alone, Dalinar was increasingly inclined to encourage the relationship, assuming he could ever get some straight answers out of Yakoved about her family. That kingdom was a mess. Most of the other Light-Eyes had retired, leaving him on an island populated by servants and parshmen who cleared away food. A few master servants, trusted for such duties, began to scoop the spheres out of the river with nets on long poles. Dalinar's bridgemen, at his suggestion, were attacking the feast's leftovers with the voracious appetite exclusive to soldiers who had been offered an unexpected meal. A servant strolled by, then stopped, resting his hand on his side sword. Dalinar started, realizing he'd mistaken Wit's black military uniform for that of a master servant in training. Dalinar put on a firm face, though inwardly he groaned. Wit? Now? Dalinar felt as if he'd been fighting on the battlefield for 10 hours straight. Odd how a few hours of delicate conversation could feel so similar to that.
"What you did tonight was clever," Wit said. "You turned an attack into a promise. The wisest of men know that to render an insult powerless, you often need only to embrace it."
"Thank you," Dalinar said.
Wit nodded curtly, following the king's coach with his eyes as it vanished.
"I found myself without much to do tonight. Elikar was not in need of Wit, as few sought to speak to him. All came to you instead."
Dalinar sighed, his strength seeming to drain away. Wit hadn't said it, but he hadn't needed to. Dalinar read the implication. "They came to you instead of the king, because essentially you are king."
"Wit," Dalinar found himself asking, "am I a tyrant?"
Wit cocked an eyebrow and seemed to be looking for a clever quip. A moment later he discarded the thought.
"Yes, Dalinar Kholin," he said softly, consolingly, as one might speak to a tearful child. "You are."
"I do not wish to be."
"With all due respect, Bright Lord, that is not quite the truth. You seek for power. You take hold and let go only with great difficulty."
Dalinar bowed his head.
"Do not sorrow," Wit said. "It is an era for tyrants. I doubt this place is ready for anything more, and a benevolent tyrant is preferable to the disaster of weak rule. Perhaps in another place and time I'd have denounced you with spit and bile. Here today I praise you as what this world needs."
Dalinar shook his head.
"I should have allowed Elikar his right of rule and not interfered as I did."
"Why?"
"Because he is king."
"And that position is something sacrosanct? Divine?"
"No," Dalinar admitted. "The Almighty, or the one claiming to be him, is dead. Even if he hadn't been, the kingship didn't come to our family naturally. We claimed it, and forced it upon the other high princes."
"So then why?"
"Because we were wrong," Dalinar said, narrowing his eyes. "Gavilar, Sadeus, and I were wrong to do as we did all those years ago."
Wit seemed genuinely surprised.
"You unified the kingdom, Dalinar. You did a good work, something that was sorely needed."
"This is unity?"
Dalinar asked, waving a hand back toward the scattered remnants of the feast, the departing Light-Eyes.
"No, Wit. We failed. We crushed, we killed, and we have failed miserably."
He looked up.
"I receive in Alethkar only what I have demanded. In taking the throne by force, we implied, no, we screamed, that strength is the right of rule. If Sadeus thinks he is stronger than I am, then it is his duty to try to take the throne from me. These are the fruits of my youth, Wit. It is why we need more than tyranny, even the benevolent kind, to transform this kingdom. That is what Noadon was teaching, and that is what I have been missing all along."
Wit nodded, looking thoughtful.
"I need to read that book of yours again, it seems."
"I wanted to warn you, however,"
I'll be leaving soon.
Leave? Delinar said. You only just arrived.
I know. It's incredibly frustrating, I must admit. I have discovered a place that I must be, though to be honest, I'm not exactly sure why I need to be there. This doesn't always work as well as I'd like it to.
Delinar frowned at him. Wit smiled back affably.
Are you one of them?
Delinar asked.
Excuse me?
A herald.
Wit laughed.
No, thank you, but no.
Are you what I've been looking for, then?
Delinar asked.
Radiant.
Wit smiled.
I am but a man, Delinar. So much as I wish it were not true at times, I am no radiant. And while I am your friend, please understand that our goals do not completely align. You must not trust yourself with me. If I have to watch this world crumble and burn to get what I need, I will do so. With tears, yes. But I would let it happen.
Delinar frowned.
I will do what I can to help, Wit said, and for that reason I must go. I cannot risk too much, because if he finds me, then I become nothing. A soul shredded and broken into pieces that cannot be reassembled. What I do here is more dangerous than you could ever know.
He turned to go.
Wit,
Delinar called.
Yes?
If who finds you?
The one you fight, Delinar Kolin. The father of hatred.
Wit saluted, then jogged off. 68. Bridges. However, it seems to me that all things have been set up for a purpose, and if we, as infants, stumble through the workshop, we risk exacerbating, not preventing, a problem. The Shattered Plains. Kaladin did not claim these lands as he did the chasms, where his men had found safety. Kaladin remembered all too well the pain of bloodied feet on his first run, battered by this broken stone wasteland. Barely anything grew out here, only the occasional patch of rock buds or set of enterprising vines draping down into a chasm on the leeward side of a plateau. The bottoms of the cracks were clogged with life, but up here it was barren. The aching feet and burning shoulders from running a bridge had been nothing compared to the slaughter that had awaited his men at the end of a bridge run. Storms. Even looking across the plains made Kaladin flinch. He could hear the hiss of arrows in the air, the screams of terrified bridgemen, the song of the Parshendi. I should have been able to save more of Bridge 4, Kaladin thought. If I'd been faster to accept my powers, could I have done so? He breathed in stormlight to reassure himself. Only it didn't come. He stood, dumbfounded, while soldiers marched across one of Dalinar's enormous mechanical bridges. He tried again. Nothing. He fished a sphere from his pouch. The firemark glowed with its customary light, tinting his fingers red. Something was wrong. Kaladin couldn't feel the stormlight inside as he once had. Syl flitted across the chasm high in the air with a group of windspren. Her giggling laughter rained down upon him, and he looked up. Syl? He asked quietly. Storms. He didn't want to look like an idiot, but something deep within him was panicking like a rat caught by its tail. Syl? Several marching soldiers glanced at Kaladin, then up toward the air. Kaladin ignored them as Syl zipped down in the form of a ribbon of light. She swirled around him, still giggling. The stormlight returned to him. He could feel it again, and he greedily sucked it from the sphere. Though he did have the presence of mind to clutch the sphere in a fist and hold it to his chest to make the process less obvious. The light of one mark wasn't enough to expose him, but he felt far, far better with that stormlight raging inside of him. What happened? Kaladin whispered to Syl. Is something wrong with our bond? Is it because I haven't found the words soon enough? She landed on his wrist and took the form of a young woman. She peered at his hand, cocking her head.
"What's inside?"
she asked with a conspiratorial whisper. "You know what this is, Syl," Kaladin said, feeling chilled, as if he'd been hit by a wave of storm water. "A sphere. Didn't you see it just now?" She looked at him, face innocent.
"You are making bad choices. Naughty."
Her features mimicked his for a moment, and she jumped forward as if to startle him. She laughed and zipped away. Bad choices. Naughty. So this was because of his promise to Moash that he'd help assassinate the king. Kaladin sighed, continuing forward. Syl couldn't see why his decision was the right one. She was a Spren, and had a stupid, simplistic morality. To be human was often to be forced to choose between distasteful options. Life wasn't clean and neat like she wanted it to be. It was messy, coated with creme. No man walked through life without getting covered in it, not even Dalinar. "You want too much of me," he snapped at her as he reached the other side of the chasm. "I'm not some glorious knight of ancient days. I'm a broken man. Do you hear me, Syl? I'm broken." She zipped up to him and whispered,
"That's what they all were, Sylvie."
She streaked away. Kaladin watched as the soldiers filed across the bridge. They weren't doing a plateau run, but Dalinar had brought plenty of soldiers anyway. Going out into the shattered plains was entering a war zone, and the Parshendi were ever a threat. Bridge 4 tromped across the mechanical bridge, carrying their smaller one. Kaladin wasn't about to leave the camps without that. These mechanisms Dalinar employed, the massive chalpold bridges that could be ratcheted down into place, were amazing, but Kaladin didn't trust them. Not nearly as much as he did a good bridge on his shoulders. Syl flitted by again. Did she really expect him to live according to her perception of what was right and wrong? Was she going to yank his powers away every time he did something that risked offending her? That would be like living with a noose around his neck. Determined not to let his worries ruin the day, he went to check on Bridge 4. "Look at the open sky," he told himself. "Breathe the wind. Enjoy the freedom." After so much time in captivity, these things were wonders. He found Bridge 4 beside their bridge at parade rest. It was odd to see them with their old padded shoulder leather vests on over their new uniforms. It transformed them into a weird mix of what they had been and what they were now. They saluted him together, and he saluted back. "At ease," he told them, and they broke formation, laughing and joking with one another as Lopin and his assistants distributed water skins.
"Ha!"
Rock said, settling down on the side of the bridge to drink.
"This thing, it is not so hard as I remember it being."
"It's because we're going slower," Kaladin said, pointing at Dalinar's mechanical bridge. "And because you're remembering the early days of bridge carries, not the later ones when we were well-fed and well-trained. It got easier then."
"No," Rock said. "The bridge is light because we have defeated Sadeus. Is the proper way of things."
"That makes no sense."
"Ah, perfect sense."
He took a drink.
"Airsick lowlander."
Kaladin shook his head, but let himself find a smile at Rock's familiar voice. After slaking his own thirst, he jogged across the plateau toward where Dalinar had just finished crossing. Nearby, a tall rock formation surmounted the plateau, and atop it was a wooden structure like a small fort. Sunlight glinted off one of the spyglasses fitted there. No permanent bridge led to this plateau, which was just outside the secure area closest to the war camp. These scouts positioned here were vaulters who leaped chasms at narrow points with the use of long poles. It seemed like a job that would require a special brand of craziness, and because of that, Kaladin had always felt respect for these men. One of the vaulters was speaking with Dalinar. Kaladin would have expected the man to be tall and limber, but he was short and compact with thick forearms. He wore a Kolin uniform with white stripes edging the coat.
"We did see something out there, Bright Lord," the Vaulter said to Dalinar. "I saw it with my own two eyes. and recorded the date and time in glyphs on my ledger. It was a man, a glowing one, who flew around in the sky back and forth over the plains.
Dalinar grunted.
I'm not crazy, sir, the vulture said, shuffling from one foot to the other. The other lad saw it, too. Once
I believe you, soldier,
Dalinar said.
It was the assassin in white. He looked like that when he came for the king.
The man relaxed.
Right, Lord, sir. That's what I thought. Some of the men back at camp told me I was just seeing what I wanted.
Nobody wants to see that one, Dalinar said. But why would he spend his time out here? Why hasn't he come back to attack if he's this close?
Kaladin cleared his throat, uncomfortable, and pointed at the watchman's post.
That fort up there, is it wood?
Yes, the vulture said, then noticed the knots on Kaladin's shoulders.
Sir?
That can't possibly withstand a high storm, Kaladin said.
We break it down, sir.
And carry it back to camp?
Kaladin asked, frowning.
Or do you leave it out here for the storm?
Leave it, sir?
The short man said.
We stay here with it.
He pointed toward a burrowed-out section of rock, cut with hammers or a shard blade, at the base of the stone formation. It didn't look very large, just a cubby, really. It looked like they took the wooden floor of the platform up above, then locked it into place with clasps at the side of the cubby to form a kind of door. A special kind of crazy indeed.
Bright Lord, sir, the vulture said to Dalinar. The one in white might be out here somewhere, waiting.
Thank you, soldier,
Dalinar said, nodding his dismissal.
Keep an eye out for us while we travel. We've had reports of a chasm fiend moving in close to the camps.
Yes, sir,
the man said, saluting, and then jogging back toward the rope ladder, leading up to his post.
What if the assassin does come for you?
Kaladin asked softly.
I don't see how it would be any different out here, Dalinar said. He'll be back eventually. On the plains or in the palace, we'll have to fight him.
Kaladin grunted. I wish you'd accept one of those shard blades that Adolin has been winning, sir. I'd feel more comfortable if you could defend yourself.
I think you'd be surprised, Dalinar said, shading his eyes, turning toward the war camp. I do feel wrong leaving Elokar alone back there, though.
The assassin said he wanted you, sir, Kaladin said. If you're apart from the king, that will only serve to protect him.
I suppose, Dalinar said. Unless the assassin's comments were misdirection.
He shook his head.
I might order you to stay with him next time. I can't help but feel I'm missing something important. Something right in front of me.
Kaladin set his jaw, trying to ignore the chill he felt.
Order you to stay with him next time.
It was almost like fate itself was pushing Kaladin to be in a position to betray the king.
About your imprisonment, the High Prince said.
Already forgotten, sir,
Kaladin said. Dalinar's part in it, at least.
I appreciate not being demoted.
You're a good soldier, Dalinar said. Most of the time.
His eyes flicked toward Bridge 4, picking up their bridge. One of the men at the side drew his attention in particular. Renarin, wearing his Bridge 4 uniform, hefting the bridge into place. Nearby, Leighton laughed and gave him pointers on how to hold the thing.
He's actually starting to fit in, sir, Kaladin said. The men like him.
I never thought I'd see the day.
Dalinar nodded.
How was he?
Kaladin asked softly.
After what happened in the arena.
He refused to go practice with Zyle, Dalinar said.
So far as I know, he hasn't summoned his shardblade in weeks.
He watched for a moment longer.
I can't decide if his time with your men is good for him, helping him think like a soldier, or if it's just encouraging him to avoid his greater responsibilities.
Sir, Kaladin said, if I may say so, your son seems like kind of a misfit. Out of place. Awkward, alone.
Dalinar nodded.
Then I can say with confidence that Bridge 4 is probably the best place he could find himself.
It felt odd to be saying it of a light eyes, but it was true. Dalinar grunted.
I'll trust your judgment. Go,
Make sure those men of yours are on the watch for the assassin in case he does come today.
Kaladin nodded, leaving the High Prince behind. He'd heard about Dalinar's visions before, and had an inkling of their contents. He didn't know what he thought, but he intended to get a copy of the vision records in their entirety, so he could have Ka read it to him. Perhaps these visions were why Syl was always so determined to trust Dalinar. As the day passed, the army moved across the plains like the flow of some viscous liquid, mud dribbling down a shallow incline. All of this so Shallan could see a chasm-fiend chrysalis. Kaladin shook his head, crossing a plateau. Adolin was certainly smitten. He'd managed to roll out an entire strike force, his father included, just to sate the girl's whims.
"Walking, Kaladin?" Adolin said, trotting up.
The prince rode that white beast of a horse, the thing with the hooves like hammers. Adolin wore his full suit of blue shard plate, helm tied to a knob on the back of the saddle.
"I thought you had full requisition right from my father's stables."
"I have full requisition right from the quartermaster's, too," Kaladin said. "But you don't see me hiking out here with a cauldron on my back just because I can." Adolin chuckled.
"You should try riding more. You have to admit that there are advantages. The speed of the gallop, the height of attack."
He patted his horse on the neck. "I guess I just trust my own feet too much." Adolin nodded as if that had been the wisest thing a man had ever said, before riding back to check on Shallan in her palanquin. Feeling a little fatigued, Kaladin fished in his pocket for another sphere, just a diamond chip this time, and held it to his chest. He breathed in. Again, nothing happened. Stormit? He looked about for Syl, but couldn't find her. She'd been so playful lately, he was starting to wonder if this was all some kind of trick. He actually hoped that it was, and not something more. Despite his inward grousing and complaints, he desperately wanted this power. He had claimed the sky, the winds themselves. Giving them up would be like giving up his own hands. He eventually reached the edge of their current plateau, where Dalinar's mechanical bridge was setting up. Here, blessedly, he found Syl inspecting a kremlin crawling across the rocks toward the safety of a nearby crack. Kaladin sat down on a rock beside her. "So you're punishing me," he said, "for agreeing to help Moash. That's why I'm having trouble with the stormlight." Syl followed along behind the kremlin, which was a kind of beetle with a round, iridescent shell. "Syl?" Kaladin asked. "Are you all right? You seem like you were before, when we first met." It made a feeling of dread rise within him to acknowledge it. If his powers were withdrawing, was it because the bond itself was weakening? She looked up at him, and her eyes became more focused, her expression like that of her normal self.
"You have to decide what you want, Kaladin," she said.
"You don't like Moash's plan," Kaladin said. "Are you trying to force me to change my mind regarding him?" She scrunched up her face.
"I don't want to force you to do anything. You have to do what you think is right."
"That's what I'm trying to do."
"No, I don't think you are."
"Fine, I'll tell Moash and his friends that I'm out, that I'm not going to help them."
"But you gave Moash your word."
"I gave my word to Dalinar, too." She drew her lips to a line, meeting his eyes.
"That's the problem, isn't it?" Kaladin whispered. "I've made two promises, and I can't keep my word to both."
Oh, storms. Was this the sort of thing that had destroyed the Knight's Radiant? What happened to your honor spren when you confronted them with a choice like this? A broken vow either way. Idiot, Kaladin thought at himself. It seemed he couldn't make any right choices these days. "What do I do, Syl?" he whispered. She flitted up until she was standing in the air just before him, eyes meeting his.
"You must speak the words."
"I don't know them."
"Find them."
She looked toward the sky.
"Find them soon, Kaladin. And no, simply telling Moash you won't help isn't going to work. We've gone too far for that. You need to do what your heart
needs to do.
She rose upward toward the sky.
Stay with me, Syl, he whispered after her, standing. I'll figure this out. Just don't lose yourself. Please. I need you.
Nearby, gears on Dalinar's bridge mechanism turned as soldiers twisted levers, and the entire thing started to unfold.
Stop! Stop! Stop!
Shallan Devar jogged up, a flurry of red hair and blue silk, a large floppy hat on her head to keep off the sun. Two of her guards jogged after her, but neither was Gaz. Kaladin spun about, alarmed at her tone, searching for signs of the assassin in white. Shallan, puffing, raised her safe hand to her chest.
Storms, what is wrong with palanquin porters? They absolutely refuse to move quickly. It's not stately, they say. Well, I don't really do stately. All right, give me a minute, then you can continue.
She settled down on a rock near the bridge. The baffled soldiers regarded her as she dug out her drawing pad, then started sketching.
All right, she said. Continue. I've been trying all day to get a progressive sketch of that bridge as it unfolds. Storming porters.
What a bizarre woman. The soldiers hesitantly continued positioning the bridge, unfolding it beneath the watchful eyes of three of Dalinar's engineers, widowed wives of his fallen officers. Several carpenters were also on hand to work at their orders if the bridge got stuck or a piece snapped. Kaladin gripped his spear, trying to sort through his emotions regarding Syl and the promises he'd made. Surely he could work this out somehow, couldn't he? Seeing this bridge intruded on his mind with thoughts of bridge runs, and he found that a welcome distraction. He could see why Sadius had preferred the simple, if brutal, method of the bridge cruise. Those bridges were faster, cheaper, and less prone to problems. These massive things were ponderous, like big ships trying to maneuver in a bay.
Armored bridge runners is the natural solution, Kaladin thought. Men with shields, with full support from the army to get them into position. You could have fast mobile bridges, but also not leave men to be slaughtered.
Of course, Sadius had wanted the bridgemen killed as bait to keep arrows away from his soldiers. One of the carpenters helping with the bridge, examining one of the wooden steadying pins and talking about carving a new one, was familiar to Kaladin. The stout man had a birthmark across his forehead, shaded by the carpenter's cap he wore. Kaladin knew that face. Had the man been one of Dalinar's soldiers, one of those who had lost the will to fight following the slaughter on the tower? Some of those had switched to other duties in camp. He was distracted as Moash walked over, raising a hand toward Bridge 4, who cheered him. Moash's brilliant shard plate, which he'd had repainted blue with red accents at the points, looked surprisingly natural on him. It hadn't even been a week yet, but Moash walked in the armor easily. He stepped up to Kaladin, then knelt down on one knee, plate clinking. He saluted, arm across chest. His eyes. They were lighter in color, tan, instead of deep brown as they'd once been. He wore his shard blade strapped across his back in a guarded sheath. Only one more day until he had it bonded.
You don't need to salute me, Moash, Kaladin said. You're light-eyed now. You outrank me by a mile or two.
I'll never outrank you, Cal, Moash said, faceplate of his helm up.
You're my captain. Forever.
He grinned.
But I can't tell you how much storming fun it is to watch the light eyes try to figure out how to deal with me.
Your eyes are really changing.
Yeah, Moash said. But I'm not one of them, you hear me? I'm one of us. Bridge 4. I'm our secret weapon.
Secret? Kaladin asked, raising an eyebrow. They've probably heard about you all the way in Erie by now, Moash. You're the first dark-eyed man to be given a blade and plate in over a lifetime. Dalinar had even granted Moash lands and a stipend from them, a lavish sum, and not just by bridgeman standards. Moash still stopped by for stew some nights, but not all. He was too busy arranging his new quarters. There was nothing wrong with that. It was natural. It was also part of why Kaladin had turned down the blade himself, and perhaps why he'd always been worried about showing his powers to the Light Eyes. Even if they didn't find a way to take the abilities from him, he knew that fear was irrational, though he felt it all the same, they might find a way to take Bridge Four from him. His men. His very self. They might not be the ones who take it from you, Kaladin thought. You might be doing it to yourself, better than any Light Eyes could. The thought nauseated him. We're getting close, Noash said softly as Kaladin took out his waterskin. Close? Kaladin asked. He lowered the waterskin and looked over his shoulder across the plateaus. I thought we still had a few hours to go before we reached the dead chrysalis. It was far out, almost as far out as the armies went on bridge runs. Bethab and Thanadol had claimed it yesterday. Not that, Moash said, looking to the side. Other things. Oh. Moash, are you... I mean... Cal, Moash said. You're with us, right? You said it. Two promises. Syl told him to follow his heart. Kaladin, Moash said more solemnly. You gave me these shards, even after you were angry with me for disobeying you. There's a reason. You know deep down that what I'm doing is right. It's the only solution. Kaladin nodded. Moash glanced around, then stood up, plate clinking. He leaned in to whisper. Don't worry. Graves says you aren't going to have to do much. We just need an opening. Kaladin felt sick. We can't do it when Dalinar's in the war camp, he whispered. I won't risk him being hurt. No problem, Moash said. We feel the same way. We'll wait for the right moment. The newest plan is to hit the king with an arrow, so there's no risk of implicating you or anyone else. You lead him to the right spot, and Graves will fell the king with his own bow. He's an excellent shot. An arrow. It felt so cowardly. It needed to be done. It needed to be. Moash patted him on the shoulder, stepping off in his clinking shard plate. Storms. All Kaladin had to do was lead the king into a specific spot. That, and betray Dalinar's trust in him. And if I don't help kill the king, won't I be betraying justice and honor? The king had murdered, or as good as murdered, many people. Some through indifference, others through incompetence. And storms. Dalinar wasn't innocent either. If he'd been as noble as he pretended, wouldn't he have seen Roshon imprisoned rather than shipped off somewhere where he couldn't do any more harm? Kaladin walked over to the bridge, watching the men march across. Shallan Devar sat primly on a rock, continuing her sketches of the bridge mechanism. Adolin had climbed off his horse and handed it to some grooms for watering. He waved Kaladin over. Princeling? Kaladin asked, stepping up. The assassin has been seen out here, Adolin said, on the plains at night. Yes, I heard the scout telling your father about it. We need a plan. What if he attacks out here? I hope he does. Adolin looked to him, frowning. From what I saw, Kaladin said, and from what I've learned about the assassin's initial attack on the old king, he depends on confusion in his victims. He jumps off walls and onto ceilings. He sends men falling the wrong direction. Well, there aren't any walls or ceilings out here. So he can just full-on fly, Adolin said with a grimace. Yes, Kaladin said, pointing with a smile, since we have, what is it, 300 archers with us? Kaladin had used his abilities effectively against Parshendi arrows, and so perhaps archers wouldn't be able to kill the assassin. But he imagined it would be hard for the man to fight with wave after wave of arrows flying at him. Adolin nodded slowly. I'll talk to them. Get them ready for the possibility. He started walking toward the bridge, so Kaladin joined him. They passed Shallan, who was still absorbed in her sketching. She didn't even notice Adolin waving at her. Light-eyed women and their diversions. Kaladin shook his head. Do you know anything about women, bridge boy? Adolin asked, looking over his shoulder and watching Shallan as the two of them crossed the bridge. Light-eyed women? Kaladin asked. Nothing, thankfully. People think I know a lot about women, Adolin said. The truth is, I know how to get them, how to make them laugh, how to make them interested. I don't know how to keep them. He hesitated. I really want to keep this one. So, tell her that, maybe, Kaladin said, thinking back to Tara and the mistakes he'd made. Do such things work on dark-eyed women? You're asking the wrong man, Kaladin said. I haven't had much time for women lately. I was too busy trying to avoid being killed. Adolin seemed to be barely listening. Perhaps I could say something like that to her. Seems so simple, and she's anything but simple. He turned back to Kaladin. Anyway, assassin in white. We need more of a plan than just telling the archers to be ready. Do you have any ideas? Kaladin said. You won't have a shard blade, but won't need one because of, you know. I know? Kaladin felt a spike of alarm. Yeah, you know. Adolin glanced away and shrugged as if trying to act nonchalant. That thing. What thing? The thing. With the, stuff. He doesn't know, Kaladin realized. He's just fishing, trying to figure out why I can fight so well. And he's doing a really, really bad job of it. Kaladin relaxed and even found himself smiling at Adolin's awkward attempt. It was nice to feel an emotion other than panic or worry. I don't think you have any idea what you're talking about. Adolin scowled. There's something odd about you, bridge boy, he said. Admit it. I admit nothing. You survived that fall with the assassin, Adolin said. And at first I worried you were working with him. Now what? Well, I've decided that whatever you are, you're on my side. Adolin sighed. Anyway, the assassin. My instincts say the best plan is the one we used when fighting together in the arena. You distract him while I kill him. That could work, though I worry that he's not the type to let himself get distracted. Neither was Relis, Adolin said. We'll do it, bridge boy. You and I. We're going to bring that monster down. We'll need to be fast, Kaladin said. He'll win a drawn-out fight. And Adolin, strike for the spine of the head. Don't try a weakening blow first. Go right for the kill. Adolin frowned at him. Why? I saw something when the two of us fell together, Kaladin said. I cut him, but he healed the wound somehow. I have a blade. He won't be able to heal from that. Right? Best to not find out. Strike to kill. Trust me. Adolin met his eyes. Oddly, I do. Trust you, I mean. It's a very strange sensation. Yeah, well, I'll try to hold myself back from skipping across the plateau in joy. Adolin grinned. I'd pay to see that. Me skipping? You happy, Adolin said, laughing. You've got a face like a storm. I half think you could frighten off a storm. Kaladin grunted. Adolin laughed again, slapping him on the shoulder, then turned as Shallan finally crossed the bridge, her sketching apparently done. She looked to Adolin fondly, and as he reached out to take her hand, she rose up on her toes and gave him a kiss on the cheek. Adolin drew back, startled. Alethi were more reserved than that in public. Shallan grinned at him. Then she turned and gasped, raising a hand to her mouth. Kaladin jumped again, looking for danger, but Shallan just went dashing off to a nearby clump of rocks. Adolin raised his hand to his cheek, then looked to Kaladin with a grin. She probably saw an interesting bug.
No, it's moss, Shallan called back.
Ah, of course, Adolin said, strolling over, Kaladin following. Moss. So exciting.
Hush, you, Shallan said,
wagging her pencil at him as she bent down inspecting the rocks. "The moss grows in a strange pattern here. What could cause that?"
"Alcohol," Adolin said. She glanced at him. He shrugged. "Makes me do crazy things." He looked at Kaladin, who shook his head.
"That was funny," Adolin said. "It was a joke."
"Well, kind of."
"Oh, hush," Shallan said. "This looks almost like the same pattern as a flowering rock bud, the kind common here on the plains."
She started sketching. Kaladin folded his arms. Then he sighed.
"What does that sigh mean?" Adolin asked him.
"Boredom," Kaladin said, glancing back at the army still crossing the bridge. With a force of 3,000, that was about half of Dalinar's current army, following heavy recruitment, moving out here took time. On bridge runs, these crossings had felt so quick. Kaladin had always been exhausted, savoring the chance to rest.
"I guess out here it's so barren that there's not much to get excited about other than moss."
"You hush too," Shallan told him. "Go polish your bridge or something."
She leaned in, then poked her pencil at a bug that was crawling across the moss.
"Ah," she said, then hurriedly scribbled some notes. "Anyway, you're wrong. There's a lot out here to get excited about, if you look in the right places. Some of the soldiers said a chasm fiend has been spotted. Do you think it might attack us?"
"You sound entirely too hopeful saying that, Shallan," Adolin said.
"Well, I do still need a good sketch of one."
"We'll get you to the chrysalis. That will have to be enough."
Shallan's scholarship was an excuse. The truth was obvious to Kaladin. Dalinar had brought an unusual number of scouts with him today, and Kaladin suspected once they reached the chrysalis, which was on the border of unexplored lands, they'd range ahead and gather information. This was all preparation for Dalinar's expedition.
"I don't understand why we need so many soldiers," Shallan said, noticing Kaladin's gaze as he studied the army. "Didn't you say the Parshendi haven't been showing up to fight over chrysalises lately?"
"No, they haven't," Adolin said. "That's precisely what makes us worried."
Kaladin nodded.
"Whenever your enemy changes established tactics, you need to worry. It could mean they're getting desperate. Desperation is very, very dangerous."
"You're good at military thinking for a bridge boy," Adolin said.
"Coincidentally," Kaladin said, "you're good at not being unobnoxious for a prince."
"Thanks," Adolin said.
"That was an insult, dear," Shallan said.
"What?" Adolin said. "It was?" She nodded, still sketching, though she glanced up to eye Kaladin. He met the expression calmly.
"Adolin,"
Shallan said, turning back to the small rock formation in front of her.
"Would you slay this moss for me, please?"
"Slay the moss?" He looked at Kaladin, who just shrugged. How was he to know what a light-eyed woman meant? They were a strange breed.
"Yes," Shallan said, standing up. "Give that moss and the rock behind it a good chop, as a favor for your betrothed."
Adolin looked baffled, but did as she asked, summoning his shard blade and hacking at the moss and rock. The top of the small pile of stones slipped free, cut with ease, and clattered to the floor of the plateau. Shallan stepped up eagerly, crouching down beside the perfectly flat top of the sliced stone.
"Hmm,"
she said, nodding to herself. She started sketching. Adolin dismissed his blade.
"Women,"
he said, shrugging at Kaladin. Then he went off jogging to get a drink without asking her for an explanation. Kaladin took a step after him, but then hesitated. What did Shallan find so interesting here? This woman was a puzzle, and he knew he wouldn't be completely comfortable until he understood her. She had too much access to Adolin and therefore Dalinar to leave uninvestigated. He stepped closer, looking over her shoulder as she drew.
"Strata," he said. "You're counting the strata of Krem to guess how old the rock is."
"Good guess," she said, "but this is a bad location for strata dating. The wind blows across the plateaus too strongly, and the Krem doesn't collect in pools evenly, so the strata here are erratic and inaccurate." Kaladin frowned, narrowing his eyes. The cross-section of rock was normal cremstone on the outside, some strata visible as different shades of brown. The center of the stone, though, was white. You didn't see white rock like that often. It had to be quarried, which meant this was either a very strange occurrence, or... There was a structure here once, Kaladin said. A long time ago. It must have taken centuries for the creme to get that thick on something sticking out of the ground. She glanced at him.
You're smarter than you look.
Then, turning back to her drawing, she added,
Good thing.
He grunted. Why does everything you say have to include some quip? Are you that desperate to prove how clever you are?
Perhaps I'm merely annoyed at you for taking advantage of Adolin.
Advantage? Kaladin asked. Because I called him obnoxious?
You deliberately said it in a way you expected he wouldn't understand. To make him look like a fool. He's trying very hard to be nice to you.
Yes, Kaladin said. He's always so munificent to all of the little dark eyes who flock around to worship him. Shallan snapped her pencil against the page.
You really are a hateful man, aren't you? Underneath the mock boredom, the dangerous glares, the growls, you just hate people. Is that it?
What?
No, I... Adolin is trying. He feels bad for what happened to you, and he's doing what he can to make up for it. He is a good man. Is it too much for you to stop provoking him?
He calls me Bridge Boy, Kaladin said, feeling stubborn. He's been provoking me.
Yes, because he is the one storming around with alternating scowls and insults, Shallan said. Adolin Kolin, the most difficult man to get along with on the Shattered Plains. I mean, look at him. He's so unlikable.
She gestured with the pencil toward where Adolin was laughing with the dark-eyed water boys. The groom walked up with Adolin's horse, and Adolin took his shardplate helm off the carrying post, handing it over, letting one of the water boys try it on. It was ridiculously large on the lad. Kaladin flushed as the boy took a shardbearer's pose, and they all laughed again. Kaladin looked back to Shallan, who folded her arms, drawing pad resting on the flat-topped cut rock